So artificial intelligence is certainly not new, and we've all had a play, right? But it's rarely being implemented strategically into organizations. It's more of a pray and spray approach. In this show, I interview Sarah Cornett. She's a US-based AI consultant, and I'm going to be asking her all about the communication padding around a successful strategic implementation of artificial intelligence. Which obstacles can we avoid? And of course, how communication can make or break a successful rollout of AI across the company. Welcome to the Experts Speak English podcast. Together, we'll discover how to talk yourself into an international career without the bullshit. Every business conversation that you have takes you closer to or further away from your goal. So this show is about getting both informal and formal conversations right. Whether that's a confidential personal chat with a key player on your team or on the stage in front of hundreds of industry experts. What you say and how you say it counts. And if leadership is your goal, then being able to influence people will accelerate the process. At the end of each episode, I give you an opportunity to try out what you have just learned on the show. Perhaps you'll be brave enough to rise to Coco's communication challenge. You'll get to try out one of the tools, techniques, or tips at work, because listening about leadership and leading are not the same thing, honey. I'm Corin Wilhelm. I'm a corporate communication coach with almost 25 years of experience of helping leaders to secure the career that someone with their knowledge and experience deserves through intentional communication, intercultural awareness, and the confidence to really show up as the English-speaking expert. So let's get cracking, shall we?
I am speaking to Sarah Cornett. She's from SC Innovate, which is an AI consulting company. She's based in Charlotte in North Carolina in the US, and she has a consultancy of her own, but we actually met each other through Global Chambers, didn't we?
Yes, we did, at the women's event.
So in Global Chambers, they have lots of different specialisms, and I will put the link to this in the show notes. But basically, there's a AI group, there's a women's group, there's all kinds of groups. And I'm running the German kind of Berlin group. Okay, so we got to know each other that way. And I thought, I've been doing this podcast for 170 episodes now. And I still haven't talked about AI simply because I didn't want to be one of those jumping on the bandwagon, let's talk about AI, without it having some relevance for corporate communication. I struggled a bit to find the right person, to be honest, but now here she is. Sarah is here with us today. So I would like to talk about AI, Sarah, from a corporate communication point of view. How do you roll it out? How do you overcome fears or concerns? What are the processes of implementation? What happens? Can we do something about knowledge management? I'm very involved in helping companies to overcome this, you know, kind of this brain drain as people march into retirement, leaving all of their knowledge behind. That isn't happening at the moment. They're taking all of the knowledge with them. So what about how do we get all of the data in one place so that the AI models can work with them? What about data security? All of these questions I will be bombarding you with today. Are you up for the challenge, Sarah?
I am ready for it. Let's go.
Fabulous. Okay, so first of all, I think we need to talk about the different perspectives that people have. Now, I know people who get very excited about lots of different tech and AI tools and everything, and it's very tempting to go out there and buy 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, however many AI tools, and I'm sure you get very tempted as well, but they all cost 20, 30, 40 euros each. So it's a big investment, whether you're paying privately as we are, you know, through our businesses or through a big company. It's a cost thing, but it's also a tech stack problem, right? If you've got too many tools, you don't really know what does what. So that's one side of the spectrum, if you like. And then on the other hand, that would be the AI junkies, I would call them. And then on the other side, I guess you've got these technophobes who are like, oh, AI, that's so freaky, and, you know, kind of really paranoid. So tell me a bit about the different perspectives that you've had to deal with in your role as an AI consultant.
No, absolutely. I love this question because, like you said, I get clients and meet with people from all different perspectives with AI. You know, I do meet with people that are very afraid of these systems, right? And they're very afraid of their jobs, and they're afraid of what it means for the future of their jobs and their corporation or their business, right? And I do get
concern, right?
Yes, it absolutely is. And I get people, like you said, who are very excited and very, you know, excited what these AI systems can do. And how I look at it is really on a spectrum of, and really it comes down to, where are you on your AI journey, right? You know, mm-hmm. I get clients who are, you know, a lot more evolved, and they've got a lot more, you know, more of their data in a centralized location, right? You know, they've done some automation in the past, they've done some investing, and, you know, maybe they've tried some AI solutions in the past, right? You know, maybe they've tried some things, maybe things didn't work out, or maybe they've seen success with those systems. So I've got some that are, you know, a little bit further along in their AI journeys, right? And they, you know, they see the benefit of it, they see the use cases, they see, you know, where they can increase their revenues or reduce their costs. You know, they're really seeing the value of these solutions, right? So that's more on the, like, more on one side of the spectrum, right, of your journey. You know, you're a lot more, you know, you're really more into the implementation side of things, right? You're really, really going all in on AI on this side, right? And then, you know, on the other side, right, you know, those who are concerned, and they're, you know, they don't know the differences in AI capabilities, right? You know, they don't know the difference in Gen AI versus machine learning and computer vision, right? And they've got all these concerns, right, on their jobs as well. And so, and I really see that end of the spectrum being more about AI education. So if we look at the whole spectrum, right, I really see it as starting with education, right? So really getting to understand about these systems, you know, what are the use cases they can drive? What are the benefits of these solutions, right? And really understanding for you and your own role, how you can use these systems to augment and assist you in your role and not have it completely replace you, right? I think so many teams and so many clients I meet with, you know, they're afraid that this is going to flat out replace them and replace their jobs. And how I look at that and how I answer that is, you know, we've gone through a lot of big technological innovations in the past, right? Of, you know, what were jobs like before computers? You know, I'm talking to you over Zoom right now. How would this have looked, you know, 30 years ago, right? You know, a lot of people thought their jobs would be replaced or changed, or how would that look like with the invention of computers and the internet? So, and I see AI the exact same way, right? You know, I see jobs getting a lot more streamlined, you know, those very tedious tasks that you don't get to spend a lot more time on the business analysis and really understanding your clients and those sort of things, that you're caught up in all these more tedious, repetitive tasks, right? That's where AI can really help you and really be a support and an assistant with you in your role. So that's really how I see, you know, and that's really down to the education piece, right? Just educating groups, educating clients and teams of how you can use these tools to your benefit and making your lives a whole lot easier and helping you get to really pay attention and dig deeper into the things that really matter to you and your business and matter to you and your role. So on that, that's the one end of the spectrum is the education. Strategy, I see kind of in the middle of, you know, a little bit about AI, not sure how to really implement this in a strategic way. You know, there's so many use cases out there, right? There's so many AI solutions out there, right? Like, how do you know what to go for? How do you know which ones to try? And I see
there's probably a lot of overlap as well, right?
Oh, so much. I mean, there'd be thousands of AI solutions out there today. So many of them do the same thing. So it's really down to just like creating a really, you know, solid strategic way of implementing these solutions. That's going to help you maximize your return on investment as well. You know, I see some companies just grabbing at the nearest solution that's in front of them. Like, does it solve a problem? Like, are you actually
doing any?
Yes, exactly. And so I feel like strategy is really nicely in the middle of really digging into like understanding your objectives as a business. You know, how are you thinking about embracing AI and other innovative technologies as well? What are your use cases? Diving into what are your pain points? Is AI even the right solution for your pain points, right? You know, is it something else? You know, AI is not a miracle cure all for everything, right? You can't just yeah. plug it in and it magically solves your problems, right? So
that's right.
So I really see strategy as that kind of point in the middle of really just digging in and just digging into your use cases, understanding where your data is today and your current tech stack so that you can start to embrace these solutions. And then implementation at the end, right? You know, you've really dug into your data, you understand, you know, you got your data in a central location, you've got the right tech stack and everything. So that's where I see implementation at the end.
Excellent. So you've got a process of implementation that you use. And basically, I'll just outline it for our listeners and audience first. So it's basically strategic objectives. Then you look at use case definition, then the solutions, then the data, the implementation, the governance, and then the delivery. So of course, with all of this, there'll be a lot of communication going on, won't there? So tell me a little bit about the communication part of your process before Absolutely. We go into the framework itself.
Definitely. So, I mean, communication is key throughout this entire process, right? I mean, AI is such a massive, this is a massive change within an organization, right? And you do get those groups who are afraid and who are a little skeptical about these solutions, right? So it really has to start with your leadership, right? Starting with, that's why I start with strategic objectives at the beginning of this framework, to really getting the C-level, everyone on the same page and saying like, okay, we're embracing this, these solutions, we're going to make this happen and really, you know, make ways for this to happen. I've seen in the past other organizations with their AI program starting from a technology team and trying to drive progress from the technology team outward. And that gets a little stuck, right? Because it gets a little stuck with, you know, communicating over the entire organization's, you know, benefits and, you know, really tying into the objectives as a business. So I think you've really got to start with the C-level and having that push down to employees, right? Pushing down to your directors and your managers, right? So getting everyone on the same page of how you communicate these solutions to everyone, right? You know, we're not here to replace jobs, right? We're going to provide training for you as well and giving them that sense of comfort of, I've never seen AI. How am I going to now suddenly learn how to use this, right? You know, really giving your team the resources and the backing, right? To say like, okay, you know, we're embracing AI as a business, you know, we're doing these things and we're educating, right? We're going to educate you about how to use these systems. What's the benefit of these solutions? Why we're onboarding these solutions? What is your role going to now look like with these solutions? So I think it really starts at the top down and really almost embedding the technology into your strategy and having that go across your entire communications throughout your organization.
Yeah. And I think it's very important, you know, not just to talk about it, you know, it's easy for CEO to go, hey, yeah, we're really pro AI, but if they're not really using it themselves, if they're not, you know, demonstrating that they're using it to, you know, optimize their processes and procedures, then, you know, it's not very believable, is it really? It's not very authentic. Definitely. Okay, so that's strategic objectives. Tell me a little bit about these, you know, these use cases.
Yes,
perhaps you should start by explaining exactly what a use case is for those less technical people who are listening.
Yes, absolutely. So, and the difference I see, right, you know, you're aligning your objectives from going to objectives to use cases. Objectives are really more high level at the top level, right? You know, are you looking to boost revenue this year? Are you looking to reduce costs, improve customer satisfaction? Like, what are those big, you know, objectives you're looking to do as a business? And then use cases get a lot more specific, right? So you get really deep into, you know, What problems do we have? Who are the problems with? Is it with our call center agents? Is it with our data scientists? You know, really getting really specific and what are those problems and diving deep into, you know, what are, like, who is it affecting? What is the problem? When or where does it happen? And then seeing like, is AI even the best solution for these problems, right? You know, it could be something else, right? You know, AI, again, it's not a miracle solution here, right? So it's, you know, really getting very, very specific about these use cases. And I use a process called design thinking, which, you know, many of you might be familiar with. So it's really kind of approaching these use cases in an empathetic lens. So really digging deep into who are these affecting and getting deep into the specifics of the use case. And then once they're defined, you can get even more refined into assigning a business value to these use cases.
Can you give me a specific example of a use case just so that we can kind of get our teeth into it a bit?
Yeah, sure. So a use case could be, say, a call center agent, right? I can use this as an example. You know, they're struggling to keep up with the demand, or they're just not really getting through to the folks that are calling in. So a call center agent might have this issue of just not working well with the customers who are calling in. So we could say, okay, you know, there's some efficiencies or some productivity loss here, right? You know, like digging into the issue here, and it's costing us money as a company, right? You know, you're not meeting that customer satisfaction.
Well, and
Customers are
reputation too,
leaving.
right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, customers are getting frustrated, right? They're calling into your help desk, they're not getting the help they need. They might go somewhere else, right? So that's a real dollar amount. That's where that dollar amount comes in, that business value of this is the value of solving this use case now. And then we say, okay, now what's the right solution to help unlock this use case? So that kind of gets into the solutioning part, is the next step of my framework, is what's the right solution to solve this use case that still is going to be a good return on investment, given we're getting this value for solving the use case. How much can we now spend budget-wise to spend on a solution? So for example, like that, I would say maybe a generative AI solution, you know, having a script or a chatbot that these agents can leverage and use when they're on the phone with these customers, right? You know, a knowledge, like a knowledge base, like you were talking about, right? What are some commonly asked questions? You know, what are some things that we should be talking to this customer about in this moment of time? What data and information do we know about this customer? So that's a good example of how we could get really specific into the problem and the use case, and then let's find the right solution to help unlock or solve this use case.
Right. And when you have a solution in mind, do you try out in the company first, or do you try out, how do you do that? Is it like in an agile way where they, you know what I mean?
Very good question. Yeah, I like to start as small as possible with these solutions, because if you try to go too big too fast with some of these solutions, you're going to run into some problems. So with any AI solution, I recommend doing a proof of concept. Let's keep the scope very small. You know, maybe we start with one agent with one problem we're trying to solve, one typical thing call centers are calling in for, right? And we have, you know, that solution, you know, just solve for that one problem right now, because that allows you in an agile framework to continuously improve and continuously learn. And the thing about AI solutions that's commonly misunderstood, AI doesn't always equal automation. Like automation is, you know, you do A, B, C, D, E, F, G in this order every time. What AI does is continuously learning from your interactions. So say like, okay, we had this interaction with someone who called in the call center. This is the message that we gave to that customer. Was it a positive? Was it a negative? So we can learn from that and say, okay, like this is a good result, right? So we're able to continuously improve, continuously monitor, because we're getting that real-time feedback and able to expand and improve our models over time. So yes, with any implementation, with any solution, I recommend starting as small as possible so you can continuously iterate.
Okay, and what about the data then? Because obviously all of this data has to be in one place, and I think most people listening have been in organizations where, you know, some of the information is here and some of the information is there. There's information in chats, there's information in emails, there's information in drives, there's information on people's computers, there's information. Sometimes people are really old-fashioned and they have it on old-fashioned index cards or you know, something like this. So how do you get all of that information into one place? Because I would have thought that that was a huge headache, and I would have thought that that could be a real stumbling block to actually get started with AI, because you know, if you don't have all of the information in one place, it's not going to work. So yeah, how do you
Definitely,
deal with
yes.
that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is an absolute headache coming from a corporate background myself. Like the data is always the most challenging part, right? You know, you could have the top of the line, best in class AI model, but if your data is, you know, it's not organized well, it's got some bias information in there, right? It's not reliable information, you're going to get an incorrect, a biased result, right? You know, you're not going to get a good result
Or
if
out
your
of
data
date,
is a
maybe.
mess. Yes, yeah, exactly. So, and it really depends again on the use case, right? So take our call center use case, for example, right? We've got our solution. Like, what is the data we need for that solution? Like, for that AI AI solution to get those interactions, you know, as we need to be for customers. And something like that, like for big customer interaction information and like the more customer facing data, I mean, you really need to get into like more of a CDP, a customer data platform. So that pulls in all of your information, right? Historical information, any real-time information as well. Like if the customer is on our website right now, are they scrolling? Are they hovering over the link? You know, all of that is really good indicators and information. And taking that call center agent example, right? Like say you've got someone who calls in and we have an indicator that they're locked out of their account. That gives us a good indication. We could say, hey, Coco, I see you're locked out of your account. Can I help you with that? Like how great of an interaction would that be instead of like, hey, what's your problem? Kind of thing. Here we go again, right? So like having that information in one place just gives you such more rich customer interactions because you know exactly, you know, what's going on. Like if you try to talk to a customer who's locked out of their account, and you try to like upsell them on a product, like that's not going to be a great interaction for them, right? So like that just gives you like just so much more insight and so much more information and just really improves your overall customer communications. But that's, you know, that's definitely a challenge is the data. So, you know, as long as if you're not ready for AI yet, I mean, just spending time with your data and getting that into a nice or organized fashion. And also I'll mention on data is the privacy piece, right? You know, you've got to make sure that those things are secured and locked down and you're not sharing any information with your AI that you don't need to. I would be very, very careful about that, right? You know, with like, you know, so many groups are using ChatGPT now, you know, if you put any information into ChatGPT, anyone can look that up. I mean, it's being used to train.
It's fair game, right? What if you put in? is accessible for anyone, you know?
Exactly. So be very, very careful with your data that like what you're sharing with these models, right? Are these models using this information to train their models, you know, to help it be, you know, more productive or whatever that is. So I would say be very, very careful in the data privacy of what information you're sharing with these systems.
And I think there is a place, isn't there, in every implementation, in every onboarding program, you know, really they should be focusing on telling the newbies, where do I save my data? Which format should it be in? And so on and so forth. I think that's something that people kind of often have to work out for themselves. And that creates actually quite a lot of chaos, doesn't it?
Yes, definitely. Yes. If you're, if you're sharing information, you don't really know what the data is, or you're just, you know, kind of like carelessly sharing information over email. And like, maybe that group doesn't, you know, doesn't need to see that information, right? You know, we have such really tight, secure, you know, controls over who has access to our databases, right? Who has access to this information, because, you know, you might be a data steward, and you might really know that information really well, exactly what's going on. If that gets into, you know, even just someone else in your company, right? Someone else could see that and they're like, they're interpreting it and they're making all these, you know, ideas and having all this, you know, assumptions about that data, but they don't know it as well, I guess, as you, as expert and the real sort of data steward. And you
do need some context around this, don't you, sometimes? So the data stage, I mean, I guess the first four stages, we've had strategic objectives, the case definition, the solutioning, the data, all of this is very much behind the scenes. So anyone working for a company doesn't necessarily know that something is going on at this point. But between data and actual implementation, there's going to be have to be some kind of communication with the teams, you know, telling them what is coming, why are we using AI, what's in it for you, you know, how do you manage that side of things, or do you leave that up to the company?
Yeah, no, it's a great point. I mean, I think everyone involved in the implementation like almost has to be that steward, or you're almost selling that AI initiative within the company, right? You know, you really are, you know, being that champion for your AI solution, right? And you're saying, you know, you're speaking to other groups, you know, some groups that might be still hesitant and still not really know about these solutions, right? You're really being that champion of your solution. And like definitely with the between the data and implementation, you know, there's got to be that formal communication of, okay, this is the project we've got going on. This is how we're going to roll it out, being very, very specific, right? About like, how, like what we're doing, why we're doing it, seeing the value of these solutions, right? Who is this impacting, right? Is this impacting, you know, this team versus this team, you know, what, you know, how is that going to change in their roles, right? Are they going to now dedicate, you know, maybe 10%, 20% of their time to supporting the solution and helping, you know, train and onboard the solution, right? So getting very, very, very specific about the roles and responsibilities, you know, what teams are being impacted, what is this going to look like now for you and your team and your role, and really getting kind of everyone, you know, everyone on board with this, having all the support, because it takes, truly takes a village to onboard these solutions, right? You know, you've got input from, you know, your data teams, your technology teams, your customer experience teams, you know, if you're going through some sort of channel communication, right? Is it your mobile app? Is it your web? You know, you've got a lot of groups that have got to come together now. And so you've got to, you know, make sure you've got those, you know, continuous communication and touch points, right? Making sure you're all on the same page about what's happening when, and getting that very strong timeline down, right? And definitely continuous education, right? So say you're onboarding a software as a service, like maybe doing some product demos, like from that company, you know, having that company come and saying, like, getting deep and showing the solution to the entire company, right? So I think the more you educate, the more, you know, opportunities you get for continuous education and learning, right, about these solutions, the better chances you are of having that successful adoption and everyone being on the same page, because it really truly does take a village, and you need everyone to be on the same page and everyone embracing the solution.
Yeah. I think at least with AI, you know, the advantage of AI is that you can give them examples and they can say, my God, wow. You know, it's like, I remember when I was rolling out e-learning, you know, I was one of the first people involved with e-learning, and people were like, well, what's e-learning? Like, how am I supposed to learn through a computer? Like, that's just ridiculous, you know? And this was like 20 years ago, right? So, or they had this idea that e-learning was click, 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 click. You know, obviously there's many different types of e-learning. We know that now because, you know, it's more rolled out now. But at that time, people really didn't know what they were dealing with. And there was a lot of, negative energy coming at e-learning at that time. And then, of course, there were a few players, as is always the case, a few players that had really lousy stuff, who were selling really cheaply, and who were saturating the market with complete crap, basically. And I'm sure this is the case with AI as well, that there are solutions out there that are super cheap or super accessible or super trendy or super something, but actually there's not a lot of meat there. There's not a lot of substance behind it. So how do I differentiate between a good and a bad tool? I mean, obviously it depends on what you need it for, but you know, there is probably this quality issue, and at the moment there's probably no control mechanism, right?
Yeah, I think you just got to really do your research in that solutioning stage, right? You know, understanding, getting really deep in what these solutions can do. Have they solved similar problems to what you're looking to use them for in the past, right? Have they, you know, have they done, you know, completed use cases like this in the past, right? Have they worked with companies in your industry before, right? You know, certainly, you know, financial services, healthcare, some of these others have a lot more complicated regulations, you know, data privacy concerns. So you've got to make sure that this solution is robust enough to be able to handle those kinds of, you know, regulations, and being able to, you know, not only solve your use case, but be able to work effectively within your organization. So the more you can do all of your research on these solutions, right? And just making sure, you know, does it fit the budget requirements that I have, right? The resource requirements, am I going to have to train my teams in how to use these solutions? And do they offer training for my team, right? What does the implementation timeline look like? You know, is this going to take, you know, for a use case we need solved, you know, yesterday, is this going to take 5 years to implement? Like, that's not going to work, right? Yeah. So understanding the timelines around implementing those solutions. But yeah, getting into all those very specific requirements is so key in that solutioning stage. But I'd say definitely, you know, definitely making sure that solution is robust enough to solve your use case within your industry, right? And be able to give, like help you along with that training and learning within your organization as well, and really be your partner with that too.
But that brings me on to another question, actually. Like, if I ask an AI consultant like yourself, you know, okay, how long do you think it will take to roll out? You know, you're probably going to say, well, how long is a piece of string? You know, it kind of depends. But once once I've got you to commit to a timescale, is it fairly realistic to actually hit that timescale? Or what can come up in, you know, to slow you down? Are they communication issues, or are they different issues? what could put a spanner in the works, basically?
Oh my gosh. Lots of things can go wrong. I will tell you that. but yeah, getting very, very specific and getting, again, getting all those teams on board, right? So like, you know, data issues can come up, right? You know, say you thought you had all this great data, like, oh yeah, we've got it all organized and it's supposed to be perfect for you to ingest. Like, maybe it's not, or maybe that ingestion piece is not really well defined yet of like, do you need this information in real time? Do you need it in a batch, in a micro batch? Do you need it, you know, like those things have to be well defined up front to make sure those processes are working for what you need that solution to do, right? Do you need to engage your, again, like the mobile team and the channel teams, like that could be really complicated as well. If you don't have those pieces defined and have those teams ready to go to implement those solutions, you know, that could definitely cause you some issues on your timeline there, right? And again, every solution, it depends, you know, it depends on the use case, depends on the solution, right, of what that timeline should look like for a proof of concept. But ideally, in general, these proof of concepts should be very, very quick, very small, right? You know, very, very narrowly focused. Like, we're only using a very small scope of data. We're only testing one rule or one communication, one model, right? We're not testing 17 models, right? You know, we're going very, very small. So in theory, you know, these proof of concepts could take a week, could take 2 weeks, could take a month. You know, it really depends on the solution and having access to all of those things that you really need to do to make your proof of concept a success.
And I guess it's like in technology as a whole or agile, you know, you also need people on the other side. Like, you need people in the companies that you're working with to do their part of the bargain, right? Like, you can't do everything. You're reliant on them for data. You're reliant on them for communication. You're reliant on them for maybe educational access to the workshop rooms that they use or whatever, you know. So it's a bit of give and take, I guess. Okay, yes. So we've talked a little bit about the data and the implementation. Before we move on to talk about governance and delivery, because that's kind of like the end side of things, let me talk to you a bit specifically about, I get a bit of a bee in my bonnet about knowledge management. So, you know, I'm in working for many agile teams. I work predominantly with agile teams as a corporate communication coach and business English trainer. And what I'm noticing is that in nearly all of the companies I'm with, they've got brilliant guys and women, of course, who are, you know, getting to the age where they're thinking of retiring in the next 3 or 4 years. And yes, they could be asked to stay on as a consultant, but they don't have to stay on as a consultant. And all of that knowledge is still in their head, right? They've had 20 years to get it out of their head, or maybe 30 even, but it's still in there. You know, they still haven't got this information out, and there isn't always an opportunity to do a handover. Sometimes, you know, somebody might die, or they go to another company, or they go to a company where they have to leave immediately because it's a competitor or whatever. So we need to think about knowledge management. I know it's not sexy, but it is the legacy of the company. And is there something that we can do with AI to help? Because that seems to be something that nobody wants to talk about, but the shit is going to hit the fan.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it makes perfect sense, right? You've got these men and women who have been in your company for, you know, they're legacy employees, right? You know, they've got a substantial amount of information, you know, that we need to have access to, you know, across the organization, across the specific teams. Right. And there is actually a really great AI solution called Guide, and it is essentially an AI solution that helps record a daily process. So say, you know, I am a legacy employee, my job, you know, back to my treasury days when I worked in treasury, I would create the daily interest rates or create this really big rates report that went across the entire organization. So, and this was a really convoluted process. I had to go to, you know, use a Bloomberg machine. I had to copy rates down from the treasury website. I had to put them all in Excel and reformat them, right? It was a really convoluted process. And there's things I had to look for whenever I was creating the rates to make sure, you know, the trend lines were looking good and detect any anomalies. I mean, it's a complicated process that I had to do every single day. And if I wasn't there one day or sick, you know, who could do that job? But there's a solution called Guide, and it essentially does a screen share with you. And it, you know, you walk through your whole process as you normally do, and it documents the entire process. If you go to a website, you put in your username and password. If you copy and paste certain things, like, it documents the entire process and puts them in a step-by-step format. So it makes it really easy to understand and transfer information.
It's easier to consume too, right? If it's a video than written documentation.
Yep. And you can have both. Yeah. It does a video recording and does a step-by-step transcription. So you can say, okay, go to this website, log in with this login, you know, copy and paste this information, plug it into Excel. So it really breaks it down in a very easy to use format. So, like, there's definitely tools like that that you can leverage to, like, get some of that knowledge sharing into one place that's really easy for other teams to understand. If someone is sick, goes on leaves or retires, right? You've got that access to that information. And so that's a way you can kind of create that knowledge database of having a place that you can access and have your team have specific access, right? You know, if it's, you know, someone on your team, you know, you only want to grant access to a few people, you can have that control to be able to do that, right? So those are some ways that you can get some of that knowledge transfer information, you know, from those legacy employees into one system. So that really helps with your, like, business continuity and things like that. So yeah, there's lots of good systems like that you can leverage.
Cool. Yeah. And that's not an extra step, right? You could just do your job and then press play, you know, like, kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. In terms of getting data in one place, if it's all scattered and things, is there, do you have some kind of AI readiness tool or questionnaire or something like that that you can give your clients just so that they know how close or how far away they are to really being able to, you know, implement AI strategically and not, you know, this kind of, we'll get this tool and we'll get this tool, but, you know, more strategically.
Yes, absolutely. That's something I've been working on creating for a while now, right? Really getting and breaking down, like, what those questions look like to really, again, going back to the AI journey, right? Like, where are you on your AI journey based on, you know, do you have, you know, your objectives aligned to AI, right? Do you have use cases defined? You know, what's the state of your data? Is it in a cloud system, right? Is it in a centralized location? Are you still working in different silos, right? You know, I'm creating that guide right now of being able to really understand really where you are on your journey so that I can, you know, offer and give suggestions of, okay, like, you know, you really need to spend some more time on your data. Here's some more resources I can give you that helps you getting your data into a better place to be able to be used by these AI solutions. So yeah, that's something I'm still developing and still working on, but I think the data is certainly, you know, that certainly seems to be the crux of a lot of companies, you know, kind of like just being a little bit stuck of, you know, like, where do I need to go? Like, it's a very complicated process for sure. And being able to,
well, I tell you what we'll do is, even though it's not ready, I have a web page for every podcast episode. So when you're ready, you tell me and I'll put it on the web page, and then people know how to access it. You know, they can send you their email or whatever.
That's okay. Great. Perfect.
Good. So then I think we wanted to talk a little bit about data security and due diligence. And I'm not sure if that falls under governance or if that's two separate things. You tell me.
Yeah, we can certainly roll it into governance, right? I mean, the sort of data privacy and, you know, a big thing in governance, right, that's being looked for is, like, bias detection, right? You know, that's a huge thing, right? With understanding our AI models and understanding if there is any bias in the models. And I feel like more times out of 10, it really starts at the data, right? You know, again, it starts with, is the data being fed into the model? Again, that's back to that, you know, that example I gave. You could have the best model in the world, but if you're feeding at biased information, you're going to get a biased output, right? So I think when you think of governance, you don't just look at the AI models themselves, you look at everything that's being fed into the model. You look at all of the data. And we stood up a governance program at the bank that I worked in. And that was, my AI solution was kind of the guinea pig in that, right? You know, we never done anything like this before. So
I bet you they were a little bit apprehensive, huh?
Oh yeah, it was a tough one. Yeah, but we had, you know, all hands on deck, right? So we had different perspectives from all across the organization. You know, we had a legal team on board. We had a compliance team, a model validation team.
Communication.
Fair lending and risk. Yeah, communications, customer experience. We had data scientists. We had the data modelers. So we had everyone kind of coming together and having all eyes on this product and this solution, so we can all look at what are all the data elements that are being used to feed into this model, right? You know, is there any issue with these? You know, could we maybe eliminate some of these data inputs that are going in? Do we need all of these in here, right? So being very, very conservative about what data is going into these models and how it's being used. You know, what is the decision this model is being used for, right? Is it, you know, obviously with things like, you know, credit worthiness and things like that, like those models can be very complicated, right? And be, you know, those are some things you need to have some extra caution and red flags about, right? You know, making sure we're not using this model for, you know, giving someone a credit worthiness score that might not be as high because of some biased information. You know, you've got to be able to detect for all of these things. So we really locked it down and we're very, very conservative with our approach. And, you know, all of our things were more like customer satisfaction, customer service sort of facing there, but having that's really what you need to stand up a really robust governance organization, though, or governance structure of having all hands on deck, all eyes on this one specific focus, right? And then, you know, with that comes the training with these teams, right? These legal teams and compliance teams, the training in AI and getting familiar with how to read these models and how to interpret and understand the inputs and the outputs. So those are extremely large exercise that we had to do. But then, you know, we got more comfortable with it, right? And had a regular routine. If we made any updates, if we wanted to introduce something new, we had that place where we would come and say, okay, let's all agree, you know, we're all comfortable with this. We all sign off and we're ready to push this into a production environment. And again, being extremely conservative throughout the entire process, right? If we're not pushing this to millions of customers, right? You know, maybe we start with 5 or 10. So that's essentially the governance process that we stood up.
Cool. Okay, so before we finish then, I'd like to ask you something of specific. So I'm in the process of planning a program for women. It's a leadership program. It's called Empower Her. And we're thinking about different ways that we can, you know, give like, almost like a simulation, really, to give these women an opportunity to prepare very, very precisely for a situation and get feedback, you know. And I'm thinking about things like using different tones of voice to kind of put them on edge, or maybe an accent that makes them, you know, realize, oh my goodness, I have some kind of biases coming up here, or something like that. Is that something I can do with AI?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. I think AI in like a simulation environment is a really unique way of using these tools. And there's some great tools. There's one called HeyGen and DID is another one, but you essentially create an AI avatar. So you can have that, you know, be a male or a female across any race. You know, you can change the tone of voice as well. You can have it be, you know, a happy, you know, childlike voice, you know, very happy, youthful voice, or a, you know, news prompter, or, you know, more aggressive voice if you wanted to. So that'd be a great way you can use those kind of avatars. You can give it the exact script you want them to read out to. So if you want it to be, you know, and again, in a simulation environment, like a more aggressive tone, or
some guy being a bit of a macho idiot, how do you react to him? Or, you know, somebody who's maybe sometimes, for example, when I was working in London, I had this girl and she was great, but she had a really timid voice and nobody really took her seriously. And you know, if we could have used something like this to help her, you know, to react to people when they really boomed at her, you know, of course, you know, this would be great. So I'll have to look into that. I might have to get back to you about that.
those are some great tools for sure.
Yeah, great. Okay, then. So I think we're kind of coming to the end of our process. So we've talked about strategic objectives, use cases, solutions, data, implementation, and governance. So now all we're talking about, this is probably the the last 20%, right? The delivery. Tell us a bit about that and the communication that drives it or pulls it back.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Delivery is a big moment, right? You've built up all of this momentum into finally going live with your AI solution, right? And you want to, again, if we're starting with a proof of concept, starting very, very small, right? So, you know, we've built up all this, we've got the data, we've done the implementation. So we're going live now, right? So, and, you know, again, with the process of going live, making sure you've got all those teams involved, you know, if you're, you know, standing up some data processes in production and all those sorts of things for a successful go live, but then also making sure, you know, the audience that you're testing this out in production with, right? Again, keeping that very, very small. Like, so not, let's not roll this thing out to millions of customers from the beginning, right? That's probably not a good, thing to do. Let's maybe try, like, maybe try internal teams first, right? Maybe you select 10 people internally to try this out and make sure it works, right? So that's, again, like back to that proof of concept, starting super, super, super small. And then you can start to build on top of that, right? You know, maybe you make some improvements and roll it out to 20 internal customers, right? Maybe you're feeling good, so you roll it out to 100, you know, in, you know, actual customers, right? So you're able to
incremental. Again,
exactly. Using agile development, right? Being able to very incrementally build on top of these, because what you're doing and what you're able to learn is that feedback loop, right? So whenever you've got these models in a production environment, you can see how these are really performing in production, right? So you're seeing how our customers interacting. Are we sending an email? Are they opening the email? Are they clicking on anything, you know, for our agent conversation? Are we getting a good reaction to these, right? So you're able to test these out and grow very, very slowly and very, in a very effective manner in a production environment. So you're able to measure, you know, really using your KPIs at the delivery stage, you know, making sure the solution is doing exactly what you set out to do, right? Accomplishing your goals, you know, are we lowering costs, improving efficiency? So you're really able to get that more accurate measure of success in a production environment. And then, you know, from there, you can continue to build and continue to fly with these use cases, right? Are we, you know, continue to expand on the one that we've got, but maybe there's another one we can expand onto, right? You know, maybe we tackle another one. So it's
like a process of constant experimentation and optimization then, really.
Absolutely. Yes. 100%. And yeah, if you look at it as an experiment, right, you know, again, starting as conservatively as small as possible, and then, you know, we build on top of that experiment, we try again and we build something new. So that's a really great way to get your feet wet and really start to build on top of these solutions so that you're able to see that incremental benefit over time as well. So that's really the delivery stage is really kind of at the end. And then, you know, once you see some success with that solution, maybe you go back to the beginning and say, what's another use case we can look into, right? You know, maybe that solution we onboarded already can solve for some other ones, right? So, you know, so those are some ways you can, again, you know, deliver your solution successfully in a safe manner that's not causing any harm to customers and anything like that. We're communicating that across, you know, our entire business. We're getting everyone comfortable with the process as well. So we're able to get those quick wins and being able to work, you know, well internally. You know, we've been through the process before, so we know what to expect as we continue to iterate, but that's the way I've seen the way you can show the most success, the best benefit for implementing solutions.
Cool. Well, I think that's been a great interview. Thank you so much for your time today. Sarah is available on LinkedIn. I'll put a link to her LinkedIn in the show notes and her website and everything. And there will be a full transcript of this podcast. There's also a YouTube version today, so you will be able to watch that, and we will be able to answer any questions that you have on that. Either I can answer any communication issues, or maybe Sarah can answer the AI side of things. We might even jump on a Zoom live or something like that.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Absolutely. Yeah, love to do that.
Okay. Right. Well, thank you so much. I look forward to seeing you guys very soon. Until then, have a great week. Be the very best communicator that you can be. You've been listening to Experts Speak English with Corinne Wilhelm and Sarah Cornett.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
Goodbye.